Father, we also want to bring before you our gratitude and our thankfulness on who you are and how you speak to us and protect us and oversee us and guide us and teach us in the Old Testament how to apply in our lives the things that are honorable, that are true, that are righteous, that are holy. And that God, we ask for the wisdom and the power to be able to accomplish your will this next 8 weeks, to learn of you, to think of you, to know of you, to understand how you saw David and why, and Father, how we fit into that picture. We ask for protection in our school system today, and more than today. We heard of an incident yesterday and a lockdown in the school, and we ask, Father, that you protect our children. You protect the teachers, you give them wisdom to know how to protect their children. We thank you, Lord, that you are steadfast and you are our sentry and you stand, and we're asking for that. I think of all the families that are represented here, and I ask, Lord, that you make strong your children, that you give us direction, that, Lord, you give wisdom to the mothers and fathers and hearts of submission and obedience to the children. May you open our minds, Lord, to you in the name of your Son. Amen.
With Inducto's Bible study, we are observing the text. And we're observing the text, and we use the tools to enter into that text, which we call the 5 W's and an H. But what are we going to do when we go through and we mark all the who's? What are we going to do with the who's? What is that? How does that help us? Are we arbitrarily marking these things?
We're going to make some lists.
We're going to make lists. And what is the point of a list?
Then we get an idea of, you know, who the main characters are, what their role is. And it helps us with main events.
It does. It really does. And actually, when you come to the main events, what kind of question is that answering?
What?
The what or the how of the main events? Or where are they are? I'm one of, now, when we went through, like, Joshua and Judah, yeah.
Can you clarify what you mean by marking?
About marking? I didn't touch base with you. You asked me if this was a character. Have you had any before? Okay, well then.
I have to be able to see.
Okay. And you've got my email now, so
okay.
Please contact
me. I love it. Tell them about that little book. Okay. How to study the Bible.
Here.
So
right here.
I
mean, you just read it. We'll talk. You make lists, but the purpose of the list isn't the list itself. Otherwise, that seems like and in this book, oh my gosh, there is so much to write on those lists. And I forgot my list here. I cannot believe that. But I went through and just did the who's. But out of the who's, I know what I started saying. In Joshua and Judges, we did a lot of where. Because what were we doing? We were moving around. Well, you still get that in here, but you get it in specific places. And so we'll get to know what those places are and why they're there and what we think of and how they belong to. But with these people, off the top of your head, do you know how they relate without making a list and looking it up and thinking about it?
Abner is David's son, isn't he?
No, his son.
He's related there somehow.
Joab is David's third general. Saul's originally, and then Ishbosheth. So we get that as we look through, and then we're gonna. So we start this chapter. Are we united or divided?
Divided.
We're divided. How are we divided?
Ishbosheth is king of Israel. Put there by Abner.
And I thought it was all Israel, Charlene.
10 tribes.
And what is David king of?
Judah.
Judah. So even though officially we haven't divided, they're divided. Mm-hmm. So they're starting out in 2 Samuel, a divided people. And they're divided by David's crew and Saul's crew. And they call it Saul's
form. Saul's family, Saul's so on and so forth. And David's general is Joab, and Ishbosheth, or Saul, because he started with Saul, is Abner. Okay. Now, we're not going to discuss this so much as we are next week, but it's just to kind of giving us a touch base thing, so that we, when we start hearing all these names, we try and put it with something. So let's do, if you have paper and you are a person who needs things organized, you may want to write a list as you go through. You also don't have to. Okay, so that's observation, and we always start with observation, and we do observation all the way through an inductive Bible study. What else goes, what else are we observing? Well, we said part of it. The who, what, where, when, why, and hows. What are you going to do with all of that? How? Why can't I interpret it right away? As I go through and read it, why can't I just interpret it then? Why do I have to study this?
Well, it's so complicated. You can't remember all the... Because you study, it's not in your mind.
You remember. Whoa, I don't. It's too detailed for me. I mean, in the sense of really trying to grab a hold. I understand what it's saying, but what I don't understand is various assembly things. For instance, you're going to come up to words in there. Like, for instance, it says, Joab and Abner are going to have a contest between their men. What the heck is a contest? And why 12? I mean, I have to ask that question. So I'm asking that question as I'm observing. So I can't interpret it until I at least understand the words that are being used. Sometimes they're big words or very, very important words. One of the words that's going to come up is the word covenant. Now, we've studied covenant before, and covenant is very important, but here it's very specific, and it's a little bit different than country to country. It's a law of people to people. So to get to interpretation, we're going to do word studies. What else do we do before we can really interpret something? Now you have, are you studying just 2 Samuel?
No.
Why not? Pardon? Well, it's more than that, even. But you're correct. 2 Samuel, the stories that we're going to get in 2 Samuel are also repeated in Chronicles. And sometimes stuff is added and sometimes stuff is not there. So to understand the story, we have to compare the various assembly places something is discussed. And so we do cross-references. We're going to have a cross-reference this week that will tell us why Joab and David are close, which you don't get in this text at all. So you need a cross-reference to understand relationships often. Any questions so far? Now, the old...
I have one.
Go ahead.
It doesn't really...
It's fine.
Why did they name their people such weird names?
Well, they probably think we're pretty weird.
I mean, you've got David.
What is your heritage? Just asking. German? What else?
Norwegian?
Have you ever looked at Irish names? They're like some weird... Somebody took letters and went, okay, now well, say it.
Well, my last name, Yelly.
Yeah.
J-E-L-L-E.
Right.
You know? But some of these names are just hard to pronounce.
And they don't even really make sense of the letters there.
Well, to us they don't, but you don't read Hebrew either.
That's the battle.
Well, Welsh, Irish, Scottish, when you start getting into the English name, oh my God. For them. Well, and the language, because they don't have a vowel, so they do more sounds involved. Yeah.
Are they all vowel names?
Are you don't need to do anything, I think.
I guess we'll have to get in there and figure that out, won't we? You want all the answers before we start the class?
Well, I can get to do it. It's like taking a test to get the answers first.
I don't think so. Okay, so let's start. Okay, application. How do you do application from the Old Testament? I mean, it's really obvious when you read the book of Ephesians or Philippians or even Gospels how to do an application. When he says do it, you're supposed to do it. That's obvious. But how do you do application with a story? What are you learning in the story?
Actually, you're learning not to do something.
So you learn about God through this story. How do you apply that? I'm not God. I can't apply God.
So God doesn't change. So that's helpful.
So I'm learning things about him that I can relate to my life in a sense of prayer, in a sense of trouble, in a sense of worship, trust,
changing my worldview.
Changing my worldview.
No, he deals with human beings, our sinfulness.
Okay, so let's take it down to the level of the people he's dealing with. Who's he dealing with in this book?
Yeah, all of those.
Okay, so as I look at these characters, what am I learning about them?
With successes and their failures.
Successes and failures in situations, right? So the situations come up, and I'm going to see how they respond to them. So I'm learning character. And when I learn character, like when, if somebody is talked about as being a righteous person, and I know I'm supposed to be looking like I am a righteous person, then that can teach me what that looks like, or how a righteous person acts in an unjust situation, or how a righteous person acts when they're persecuted, or any of those things. And so I want to look out for the character qualities they're talking about. And see if I understand it or even if I agree with it. Because you could have, just because you have language doesn't mean it's accurate. We know that by the news that we hear. Oftentimes a news is slanted, but they're using the same words I would. So I have to figure out, is this an accurate use of that word? Yeah.
Also, it shows the relationship to God when they obey and when they don't obey.
And what that looks like,
and how we do the same thing, so we can
exactly. So that's how I can start learning how to apply a story that just seems like a story. It isn't, you know, when you're reading something that is very specific, like in the New Testament epistles, and tells you what you're supposed to do and what this looks like. You know what you're supposed to do. You know how you're supposed to do it. You don't know why you're not doing it, maybe, but you start learning all the aspects. So when you get to the Old Testament, Older Testament, you're really getting the original picture on how God set it up for us to understand and see. So that's what we'll continue talking about, too. Yeah?
I think another important aspect that I love about the Old Testament is that you do get to see the true characters who God is.
Yes.
Because I think that we can get lost in the kind of softer side, and we forget what a powerful God he is, and in scary ways and in great ways. And
I do think we're supposed to be afraid.
I agree.
You know, and because if we are not afraid, I'm not talking about you walking around and asking petrified that God's going to blow something out of the sky at you, and you didn't do anything, but he's going to get you anyway because you're not perfect. That is what we learn in the Old Testament, is the character and nature of the Father God. Because when we come to the New Testament, we much more see how he is explained through Christ, which is what John tells us.
Jesus explains the Father, explains God. So we're trying to bring all those aspects together as Christians to really understand him and be accurate. We want to be accurate. Nothing more irritating to me in my life is to hear somebody say something about God and it's not even biblical. You know, well, I expect it from the world, but I don't expect it from the church. And I still hear it from the church because they heard it in a sermon somewhere on the radio or the TV, and somebody else said this is what happened, and it's not consistent. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I had a woman in the Bible study who came to me for counseling, and she said she knew that God wanted her to leave her husband and go back to her first husband. Well, the first husband wasn't a Christian to start out with. He never was, never changed, was a very violent, detestable person, but she said couldn't let go of him. And there's enough verses and enough places to go to understand that once you're divorced and have married someone else, you can never go back to that first person because they are now as a brother, according to Leviticus. So would God transcend his own word and do something different? He wouldn't. But she said, but I got a word from God. You know what? If it's not in the Bible, don't give me your words from God. Because that's the only thing I can measure up to. You're asking me to trust your perfection. And I cannot do that. And you can't do that with me. That's why we are all to be good Bereans who are studying God's word and checking it out for themselves. Periodically, I burble something that's a little weird, and you need to know if it's accurate or not. Okay, any questions? Well, let's start looking at the chapters, and I am not going to read all those names. Just so you know. There's a lot of them, yeah. But as you're reading and marking names, I also want you to just see, you're going to have in the back of your, oh, you haven't had it, so let me do this. And I don't, there are some in this class who haven't been here forever. As you open your book, your study book, your handbook, whatever you want to call it, if you go to the back of your book, you will observe there is an appendix. And in the appendix should be your text. And that's where you get your, now some of the text is in with the various assembly chapters because they're doing cross-references and they'll take like a chapter out of some other book. Now you also have back there maps. Generally, if it's a map that's going to be used throughout your study, it will be in the appendix. If it's a map that's only going to be used in that one chapter you're looking at, it's in the chapter. So if you get to it and you see it in the chapter, then when you're done, put it back there. But we're going to be looking, we're going to want to look through this, in the places they're going. We're going to see them repeated. Places are going to be repeated. So you want to get a feel of where they're at and what they're doing, which is what we tried to do throughout the study of 1 Samuel. 2 Samuel is going to be a little more specific because David's going to get attached to a place. And he won't be running around so much hiding in caves. Are you there? Okay, let's... Do you remember what happened at the... we'll talk about that. Alright, now it came about after the death of Saul. So where is Saul right now?
Yeah, okay.
When David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David remained 2 days in Ziklag, on the third day, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes torn and dust on his head. Bless you. And it came about when he came to David that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. So did you learn anything about these four guys in this so far? David was in Ziklag for 2 days, and where did he come from?
The slaughter of the Amalekites.
Okay, so pay attention to that, because there's been a battle. Who are the Amalekites? We've already studied this stuff, so I can answer you those questions. Who are the Amalekites?
Long-time enemies since when Israel came out of Egypt.
Why did they become their enemy when they came out of Egypt?
Because they attacked the end of the column and killed.
So they were considered enemies from way back then. And God actually, what did God say to them? What did he say to Saul when he was supposed to go into that area?
McGee says they were the trash can.
Saul was supposed to utterly destroy them.
They were to utterly destroy them. Did Saul say that he had done what he was supposed to do?
What is this? Leaving us behind.
He didn't do it. What did he leave?
Well, he left some of the livestock, and he left
the best.
The best of the livestock. And he left the king.
And he left the king. So here we are. We have an Amalekite. Slaughter of the Amalekites that David remained 2 days. So he's come back. That's where he is. On the third day, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes torn and dust on his head, and came about when he came to David that he fell to the ground and prostrated him. Prostrated himself. And David said to him, from where do you come? And he said, I have escaped from the camp of Israel. Now, pay attention, because we're going to be talking Israel, Judah. They're different here. So when he says from the camp of Israel, who's he talking about?
Ishbosheth.
But at this point, it's Saul and Jonathan. Right. Okay. And David said, how did things go? Please tell me. And he said, the people have fled from the battle also. Many of the people have fallen and are dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also. So David said to the young man who told him, how do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead? Yeah, which is the right question to ask, right? The young man who told him said, by chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and behold, Saul was leaning on his spear, and behold, the chariots and horsemen pursued him closely. When he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me and said, I am here. He said to me, who are you? And I answered him, and I am an Amalekite. Then he said to me, please stand beside me and kill me, for agony has seized me because my life still lingers in me. So I stood beside him, and I killed him, because I knew that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown which was on his head, and the bracelet which was on his arm, and I have brought them here to you, my lord. Now we'll discuss this next week. We're really not discussing it. We're just trying to observe here. How far do I want to go for this stuff? But yeah, let's just stop that far. So tell me what you learned about Saul, Joab, Abner, and Ishbosheth, if anything. So David learned about their death. Okay, and as you said before, he's in Ziklag.
Well, Saul was wounded in battle.
And according to his story.
Yeah.
Now we've read this differently in 1 Samuel, so you're going to want to compare and see what you think about that. Is this guy telling the truth, or
he wasn't wounded in battle? That was true. But not the other part.
As far as we know, so we need to compare those things, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he's taking credit, though.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, why do you think he thinks David's going to like this?
Because
they were enemies, supposedly.
Yep, Saul and David.
Because Saul was David's enemy, right?
Yep.
So he takes the crown and the bracelet and brought it here to David. Then David took hold of his clothes and tore them. And so also did the men who were with him. They mourned and they wept and they fasted. So what did they do? Their response was to mourn.
Jonathan
and Saul's death. You can put more on that if you want to. You're going to end up rewriting the whole thing if you put too much. So it's up to you how much you want to do. Mourn, weep, and fast. It's pretty good.
Okay, so with the fasted, does that just mean do that close, or does that imply a fasting for
it's a mourning. It's a respectfulness.
we'll talk more about that next week. But if I talk about it too much, I'm teaching a class today, and I'm supposed to be doing that today.
Okay.
But that is the process, their process of mourning. You think of the Israelites of going to the Wailing Wall, and basically they also fast while it's daylight.
And tear their clothes.
And tear their clothes, right, which is amazing because how many clothes do they have?
Right.
So that's their mourning clothes, the torn clothes.
So they have two sets?
Maybe they just walk around with the torn clothes for a while, looking like, and you go, oh, they're in mourning. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You get to find that out. Saul and his son Jonathan and the people of the Lord and the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. David said, so who all mourned, wept, and fasted?
All of
who? Take it from the verse. All of Israel. Now, you need to think about this, because it does say the house of Israel. Sometimes that's differentiated. Is this talking about the house of Judah too? Or, I mean, God calls Israel Israel, but then they get separated later into two almost specific nations. What is he saying there? David said to the young man who told him, where are you from? And he answered, I'm the son of the Ammonite, an Amalekite. And David said to him, how is it you're not afraid to stretch out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? And David called one of the young men and said, go cut him down. So he struck him and he died. And David said to him, your blood is on your head, for your mouth has testified against you, saying, I have killed the Lord's anointed. Then David chanted with this lament over Saul and Jonathan, his son, and he told them to teach the sons of Judah the song of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jashar, and you may want to look up what the heck that book is. Yeah.
So the guy they killed is the guy that killed Saul?
Well, he says he did, yeah.
But Saul asked him to.
Well, he says he did.
Oh.
if we remember, that's not the same story that came out of 1 Samuel.
But this story, that's how it's going, and yet they still killed him.
But why? Because his mouth testified against him. If I said to you, I stole the money that was in Joy's office, and it's gone.
There's money in my office.
Surprise! But is it right? It's not for money. It's the truth.
Saul was, according to this, Saul was dying. And he just wanted this guy to finish him off.
Right.
Well, and whenever we study it this week, you'll be reminded to go back to the actual what happened and see, is this guy's story what really happened?
No.
So he would be braiding them, wouldn't he?
Yeah. And then you'll see.
And how, now just think about this for a minute. And this is one of the things we have to be really careful with all leaders of any country. Do you and I have the right to take the life of a very bad leader?
No.
During the time of Hitler, the Christians had a chance to kill Hitler. This is a story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. These are difficult questions, and he had to fight with God may not agree with him. So because we're taking on us, it makes me say I can go toe-to-toe and judge this man. Now, if he's not a Christian, on what basis do you judge somebody? If they're not a Jew, on what basis do you judge them?
They don't know the truth.
Yeah, think about it, because that's really the basis of this story. This man was not a Jew, but he did know who Saul was. And he's quite proud of the fact he did what he did, because he comes to David.
He killed for profit.
Could be.
Yeah.
Or at least said he did.
It doesn't sound like, if you read 1 Samuel, that he just came across the scene and thought he was going to get a reward.
Right.
he added himself into it.
Yes. Right. So that's, so think about this, because there are those things that the Lord puts in there for us to really meditate on and think. And what character quality can you learn out of this one? Because this is a bad character.
Honesty.
What does God think of leaders, even bad ones?
They're anointed.
They're still anointed by Him. And we can get that out of Romans 13. It is God who puts these people in place. Did He say that He's putting holy people in place? In fact, you can often know a country has a leader it wants because that's their bent, which goes for us too, by the way.
Yep.
Somebody want to go see if they can help him?
Who's somebody?
I don't know. Yeah, I think probably somebody bringing a child to the daycare and doesn't know the door.
Is there a difference between, like, anointed? I mean, Saul actually was anointed. God told Samuel to anoint him, and he did anoint him. But, you know, kings and other people in authority over us, God didn't necessarily tell anybody.
Well, what
they just are in authority.
We looked at this before. What does the word anointed mean? And is it only believers who are anointed?
But you were saying anointed by God.
Well, he says he's the one who puts the leaders in power. Yeah. That's pretty anointed. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to, the reason it doesn't have to be a believer is, you know, because of Cyrus.
Right.
Cyrus was set apart to do God's will for his purposes. Cyrus was a believer. Didn't end up a believer.
Well, obviously Hitler was a leader, and in some sense that he was anointed, and yet he did very awful things against God. God, he didn't do what God had appointed him to do, obviously.
No, neither did Saul.
Yeah. Well, Saul started out good, at least.
For one day. It was after that he lost everything. Right in the beginning. Yeah, he was pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
Your beauty, O Israel, is slain on your high places. How have the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon. Or the daughters of the Philistines will rejoice. The daughters of the uncircumcised will exult. O mountain of Gilboa, let not dew or rain be on you, nor fields of offering. For there is the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul, not anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, and the sword of Saul did not return empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and pleasant in their life, and in their death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Jonathan is slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. How have the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? I want us to observe the difference between what is done in war versus the rest of life. Just pay attention to it, because we'll probably touch base on that. 2 Samuel 2. Any questions yet? So what did you learn about David in this chapter? He was mourning Jonathan and Saul's death.
He was a poet.
He is a poet, which we sure get from Psalms, don't we? Very good. What else did we learn about David? Because he was in that position. Right, and so the Lord took it away. He was in that position. And he knew that the Lord had anointed. You can't get away from the fact that Samuel went out there to find David and anoint him. So there's that, but he didn't take that position until God gave it to him. Which again is a very patient man, because it took a lot of years for him to get there.
And he really loved Saul and Jonathan.
Which is amazing. After all, did he ever fight with Saul? Saul kept looking to fight with him, but he never fought with Saul.
Yeah, David was the enemy to Saul, but I don't think Saul was the enemy to David.
No. It was the other way around.
Well, we know what you mean.
Did I say it backwards?
It doesn't matter.
Maybe you already did this because I zone out sometimes. But the words that we're supposed to be marking, are you going to go over that?
They do it in your lesson.
They do it in our lesson. I like geographical locations and times and stuff like that.
Not the geographical locations. All you do that with a map, because it's the same thing. So where is your where answered? Your where is answered by going through the map. And generally what they will do is tell you, you know, point where you start and then follow where you go on the map. And I would even do two colors on that, one for Israel and one for Judah. You're not going to go to a lot of places, but you'll see how they do different things and how they end up at the same place at the same time. But the what's and the why's and the how's are, you can't get anywhere but doing little lists. And generally the best way to do it is write your list on your people or what your keywords are, and it does tell you what your keywords are. And then go through that list and start picking out from there what you learn. You know, even your wares, it'll have David went to Hebron, and, you know, the chef went to someplace else, and then they stayed there, and David had a place that he became, was crowned king, and that sort of became his place from then on, you know, that kind of thing. But the words, I'm trying to think, the words, there's about five of them, I think, through that whole thing. You'll see. And it does say it. What, Kim, do you remember what the tag would be for how you tell a keyword if they don't give it to you, which they now mostly do?
You do it now. A repeated word.
A repeated word?
Or a word that if it was left out, the text wouldn't make sense.
Perfect. Because you kind of have to wonder, like, for instance, why did David do this to this guy? Mm-hmm. Well, you get to that word, the God's anointed. That would be your key word there. And to understand why what was done was done, you have to understand what it means for God's anointed and who he anoints. And that's why we actually did that in our last section. We looked that up and talked about it for that reason. But if you ever feel like you're overwhelmed, which you will, especially if you're new to this, the pieces do start coming together. So it's just like stay on track, and ask questions. You guys ought to know that I love questions, right? Because if you have one, you could have one question that you don't ask, and it confuses the whole rest of your study. And if you don't ask it, you're going to always be in sort of study limbo.
Except in my case.
Except in your case, because you're...
Because my questions confuse everyone.
Not really. Following them is an entirely different thing. That's why I'm up here and you're down there. But fortunately, it won't be long before I will also be down there. Never know. Okay. So, did I go, was I in two?
Yes.
Why did I close it? Did I read part of two?
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's what I was thinking, that's where I am. Oh, that he just read his. It came about afterwards that David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up to one of the cities of Judah? Now, pay attention to what the Lord did, because we are looking at what kind of a man here. What does God call David?
Man
after his own heart. So we want to pay attention to what he does in his relationship to God, because that'll teach us how we can also be women after God's heart. So David does what when it came about afterwards? He inquired of the Lord. What did Saul hardly ever do?
Or inquire up to the Lord.
The only time he did inquire of the Lord is when he got desperate, and he goes and pulls Samuel up out of the grave. Did he not get that God said? No. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up to the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said to him, "Go up." So David said, "Where shall I go?" And he said, "To Hebron or Hebron, depending on what kind of Jewishness you know." So David went up there, and his two wives also. This is where I start to bow out of names. Hinnom, the Jezreelite, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. David brought up his men who were with him, each with his household, and they lived in the cities of Hebron. Now that, therefore, tells me it's not one city, right? Now we've actually looked at that before. You may want to think about that a little bit. Then the men of Judah came there and anointed David king over the house of Judah. So now David is king over whom? Who's he not king over? And they told David, saying, "It was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul." And David sent messages to the men of Jabesh Gilead and said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, because you have shown this kindness to Saul your Lord and have buried him. Now, may the Lord show loving kindness and truth to you, and I also will show this goodness to you because you have done this thing." So what do we learn about David here? It goes on our list.
He shows his gratitude.
He shows his gratitude. And even though he's the king, he humbles himself in that, doesn't he? So do you ever get to a point where you're too big for your britches not to thank the peons? No. May the Lord show you loving kindness and truth to you, and I also will show you this goodness to you because you have done this.
Well, and there's a contrast here between this report has come to him and he's showing goodness because they've done this thing, whereas the other Amalekite who'd come to him and how he showed that. So there's a contrast. He's rewarding, or he's showing kindness to those who have done a noble thing, an honorable thing, a truthful
exactly.
thing.
So if I want to learn about nobility and honor for anybody, mm-hmm. I look at these kinds of things, don't I? And I learned that bragging about what I did, especially when I didn't really do it, is not what God wants. In fact, it could end up in the loss of everything I have. Okay. Now, therefore, let your hands be strong and be valiant. Good to look up the word valiant. For Saul, your Lord, is dead, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. But Abner, now who is Abner the general of?
Saul.
He's the general of Saul, so he just shifted things, didn't we? Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, has taken Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. And he made him king over Gilead, over the Hazarites, over Jezreel, over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, even over all of Israel. So all of Israel would include what? Just looking at verse 9. Because that when you say even over, that's like an equal sign. That's condensing it all, and all these are called Israel. So everything in verse 9 is Israel. And Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he became king over Israel, and he was king for 2 years. The house of Judah, however, followed David. The time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. Why are we paying attention to the times? Why do we even care?
I don't
know. We're getting a timeline. Exactly. And did that say that David was king only 7 years and 6 months?
No.
What does it say he was king what?
Over
the house of Judah. So pay attention to that. Write that down. And we see that Ishbosheth only made it for 2 years. So we want to figure out what happened, what changed, why one is different than the other. Just paying attention. Remember, we're observing, 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 observing. Something pops up, I want to know where it fits. Where does the fact fit? Well, a timeline is answering what question?
When.
It's a simple statement, when. Verse 12, now Abner, the son of Ner, went out from Ahinoam to Gibeon with the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met them by the pool of Gibeon. And they sat down, one on one side of the pool, and one on the other side of the pool. Now that picture of Joab, who is Joab?
David's general.
And who's with him?
His two brothers.
Well, here, not yet.
Oh, okay.
Verse 13.
The servants of David.
The servants of David. So they're together. It kind of looks like they're just taking some time out
there.
They're
sitting around a swimming pool.
Right, there you go.
There and have forgiven.
Getting a little tan.
Yeah.
And Abner said to Joab, now who are these guys?
The two army men.
The two generals. So maybe they have a reason for coming together. Now let the young men arise and hold a contest before us. That's where I said you need to look up the word contest and figure that one out. And Joab says, let them arise. So they arose and went over by count. 12 for Benjamin and Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. Why 12 for Benjamin? Why Benjamin? What is Benjamin?
It's the tribe.
And where is that tribe?
It's part of Israel.
One of the most northern tribes. Just paying attention here. Each one of them seized his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in the opponent's side. So they fell down together. And you need to answer in that. An awful lot of who's there, and what are they doing, and where do they end up, and who's the they?
And how could one win if they all fell down together?
That's why they kept trying.
This is why. Look at it. Let us discuss it.
I'm sorry.
You're looking for answers. I'm not giving you answers. I'm giving you questions.
Well, I got lots.
Okay, good. Yeah. Write them down. That day, the battle was very severe, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. Now, the three sons of Zeruiah, were there, Joab and the two brothers. And one was as swift-footed as one of the gazelles, which was in the field. And Asahel pursued Abner, and did not turn to the right nor turn to the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, is that you, Asahel? He answered, it is I. So Abner said to him, turn to your right or turn to your left and take hold of one of the young men for yourself. That's another one we need to answer. What the heck is he talking about there? And take for yourself his spoil. But Asahel was not willing to turn aside from following him. Abner repeated again to Asahel, turn from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I lift up my face to your brother Joab? So what did we just learn about Asahel? He's a brother of Joab. As is,
he can talk while he's running.
Well, it says he's swift, so he has really good lines. That's another thing we can learn in his list. Yeah.
Another question is, why did Abner care? There were two opposing armies, you know. Why did he care if he lifted his face up to Joab?
But that's a very good question, because it's an honor question. And let's finish it up. Because what is he saying? Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? So he's telling him what we have to do if he keeps following.
Right, I'm killing him. He's a friend.
How then could I lift my face to your brother? That's what I was trying to say. There's a difference between me coming here and just deciding to kill her, or being in a battle, which men consider an honorable thing, and killing him in the battle. Right?
Right.
Okay, so
which gives you a clue of what contest means. It's not a contest like we think, but it's a battle.
With an end.
They did it with Goliath and David.
Right. So there's an end and a winner.
Yeah.
Although it looks like they all died to me.
But sometimes, don't they, like, it seems like there's another place where they choose a certain amount to go up against each other.
Yeah.
And whoever wins, it saves a lot of lives.
I agree, but it says 12, and 12 went in, and 12 grabbed hair, and 12 took knives and put them through, and 12 went down. On both sides. 24. I can't
and then
see.
Somebody win.
That's what I mean. I don't see it as.
Who does it quick enough?
Well, after they
so, think about it this
they,
week.
Maybe they all remember if they all
die. However, yeah, it doesn't
right.
say,
that's
does it? So we can't go past what it says. And sometimes, guys, we don't get the answers because they're not there. And it isn't our story, and maybe we just didn't need to know. But make sure it's that, not that we're being sloppy. Turn aside from following me. Okay. However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the belly and butt end of the spear so that the spear came out his back. He fell there and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to the place where Asahel had fallen and died stood still. But Joab and Abishiah pursued Abner when the sun was going down. They came to the hill of Ammah, which was in front of Gihah, by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. The sons of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became one band. And they stood on the top of a certain hill. And Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever?" This is something to go over because this is a very interesting section. "Do you not know that it will be bitter to the in the end? How long will you refrain from telling the people to turn back from following their brothers?" So Joab said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely then the people would have gone away in the morning, each from following his brother." So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the people halted and pursued Israel no longer. Nor did they continue to fight anymore. That looks like a nice end to a battle, doesn't it? Abner and his men went through the Arabah at night. So they crossed the Jordan, walked all morning, and came to the hill. And Joab returned from following Abner when he had gathered all the people together. 19 of David's servants beside Asahel were missing. But the servants of David had struck down many of Benjamin and Abner's men, so that 360 died. And they took up Asahel and buried him in his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem. Then Joab and his men went all night.
Sorry.
What are we doing?
Unplugged this.
Oh.
Sorry.
Joab and his men went all night until the day dawned at Hebron. You're going to get a lot of cross references here. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. When you think about the house of Saul, with what we've looked at in the past and watched out how Israel is divided, who is that talking about?
Benjamite.
Because Saul was a Benjamite. Between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew steadily stronger, but the house of Saul grew weaker continually. Why do you think it grew weaker? Just from the simple stuff we've looked at. What do you need to do to have a war or anything?
Well, a lot of their men were killed.
What else was killed?
Their leader.
Basically, they have no leader. Their leader is Ish-bosheth, and you don't see him out on the battlefield at all, do you? And Jonathan is dead. So it kind of makes sense that one would grow stronger and one would grow weaker. Sons were born to David and Hebron, and you've got that whole list there. Verse 6, "It came about when the war between the house of Saul and the house of David that Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul," because he was what? He had been the commander, right? Now, Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, and you're going to have to study this to figure this thing out. The daughter of Aiah and Ish-bosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" Then Abner was very angry over the words of Ish-bosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? Today I show kindness to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers, to his friends, and have not delivered you to the hands of David, and yet today you charge me with a guilt concerning a woman? May God do so to Abner, and more so, if, as the Lord has sworn to David, I do not accomplish this for him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul, and to establish the throne of David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan even to Beersheba." He could no longer answer Abner a word, because he was afraid of him. So what did we learn about Ish-bosheth? Well, he's not a man of war, is he?
And Abner had been Saul's, one of Saul's commanders, you know what I'm saying? So he was kind of living as king through Abner, what was left of that government.
So the seat of Saul's, the house of Saul. Now, we did see that Ish-bosheth was king for how long?
2 years.
2 years. We may be seeing the end of it fairly soon here.
Well, and for whatever reason, he didn't go to battle with his brothers and Saul.
And we haven't really discussed that yet.
We're not
that's
told.
An observation. We're observing. So, are all men supposed to be, I'm talking about Israel here, well, the world, who are the... Are all men supposed to be men of war or of the battle?
Able-bodied young men.
Able-bodied
young men.
Something to keep remembering these things.
And the firstborn were given to God. They were to be priests.
So we're seeing how it's divided out, aren't we? Okay. He said, God... Then Abner sent messengers to David in his place, saying, whose is the lamb? Make your covenant with me. So what was, and we're not going to discuss this, just straight bottom line answer, observing, what was Abner's response to being chastised by Ish-bosheth?
Very offended.
Very.
You're done for, because now the... I kind of think Ish-bosheth was just kind of figurehead type thing, you know, the son of Saul, but Abner was really the one who...
Well, you know, he wasn't raised to be the king.
Yeah.
Who was raised to be the king?
Jonathan
was, and Jonathan died in battle, so...
And Abner anointed him, right, or...
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just really...
It really wasn't very fair to Ish-bosheth, was it? He wasn't trained to be the leader. I mean, during World War, just before World War II, the King of England became the King of England because the one who was trained to be the King of England abdicated.
Yeah.
He was totally lost. Just totally lost. But he rose up to the occasion. So there are times you can, but there are times, you know, you just never think about it. If you're the 34th in line, you're not thinking about being the king because it just isn't going to happen. And, gosh, here it did.
Saul's hatred for David spilled over to Abner. He hated David too.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because he was his enemy
right.
At this point. I mean, if you're the king, which Saul was the anointed king by God, Abner was his general... David was a buzzy bee in his ear. All of them thought that. And they had chased him for how long?
Right. So when Saul's dead, that doesn't change anything for Abner. He's just like, okay, we're just getting a new king here. And
right.
Going on.
Just go, well, that's
he
the line of succession.
Whoever has to choose. Here we go.
And that's the line of succession. Everybody knows who the next king is going to be because you have to be born into the family.
But he also knew that David was the rightful one because here we're seeing that he's now saying,
well, he's getting there. But
yeah.
You have to ask yourself, is it real or is this also put on?
Yeah.
Make yourself, I mean, he's posturing. He could be posturing too.
What do you mean? Like pretending, whatever.
What posturing? We'll talk about it next week.
Likes to be on the winning side, is what it looks like.
Right, and I want a position. Yeah. You know, I need an income. So I am making sure I keep my income and my position. And right now, Ishbosheth is not going to give me the position I want. As much as, boy, turning over to David. Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you to bring all Israel over to you. So what's his promise?
To bring Israel.
Why is that important?
They wouldn't be divided anymore.
They wouldn't be divided anymore. These are the people that they've been fighting with. And where's that going to leave Ishbosheth?
Out.
All by himself. He said, good, I will make a covenant with you, but I demand one thing of you, namely, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see me. Why does he want Michal, Saul's daughter?
He bought her. She's his. No.
So David said, man, you're going to look those verses up too.
Well, and there's something to, she is still the king's daughter. She is Saul's daughter. And David wants, and his wife. And so David wants that all gathered together again, immediately.
Well, I mean, he's doing the same thing Abner's doing. He's posturing, too. Right. This is his wife. They didn't have a right to pass her on to somebody else.
So it's kind of wanting Abner to prove himself a little bit here?
Could be. Mm-hmm. Have to think about that this week, huh?
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Why is it 100 foreskins when it was 200?
Mm-hmm. Don't know. Have to look that up. So David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife, Michal, to whom I was betrothed for 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Ishbosheth sent and took her from, maybe one was like the other part of buying a wife, I don't know. So sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife, Michal, to whom I was betrothed for 100 foreskins. Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband, from Peltiel, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping as he went, and followed her as far as Berim. Then Abner said to him, go return. So he returned. Now Abner had consultation with the elders of Israel. You notice, you know, she's never asked? Either way, when he gave him away the first, second, and gave her back. Abner had consultation with the elders of Israel, saying, in times past you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David I will save my people, Israel, from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all their enemies. Now I want you to pay attention to what position Abner is taking. Does he sound like a general, or does he sound like a king? Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin, and in addition, Abner went to speak to the hearing of David in Hebron. All that seemed good to Israel and to the whole house of Benjamin. Then Abner and the 20 men with him came to David in Hebron, and David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. Abner said to David, let me arise and go and gather all Israel to my Lord. What's that word? Oh, and the king. I put a Star of David on there. I can't read it. That they may make a covenant with you and that you may be king over all that your soul desires. So David sent Abner away and he went to the Keys. Now behold, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away and had gone in peace. When Joab and all the army that was with him arrived, they told Joab, saying, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he sent him away, and he has gone in peace. Three times, sent away, gone in peace. Then Joab came to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why then have you sent him away, and he is already gone? You know, Abner, the son of Ner, that he came to deceive you, and to learn of your going out and coming in to find out all you're doing. I think we'll stop there just because I want us to think a little bit about that. Again, why are we going through this and what are we going to learn that we can apply to our own life? What is going on between Joab and Abner?
They've been enemies. They've been fighting forever.
So what did Joab just say?
He said, why did you stick him away? You just learn to find out about what you're doing.
So you need to think about, is this real or is this jealousy? Is this real or is this competition? Could be. Got more to the story there. But what did you learn about, like, between Joab and Abner? What did you learn about Joab through the all 2.5 chapters?
Well, Abner killed his brother, so he's already not very happy with him. They're competing commanders, you know, competing armies.
Well, especially if now he is under the peaceful whatever of David.
Yeah, he's not happy with that.
No, because there's a commander that comes in and he just sees him as deceiving and deceptive. But that's his opinion.
Right. I mean, there's probably revenge.
Probably revenge.
Yeah, for his brother.
Did he bother to find out the story about his brother?
No, he didn't care.
Rather than killed.
Because it's revenge. Okay, so is revenge part of a war or is that
personal? That's personal.
Again, pay attention. There are things that you do exactly the same things in a war are honorable and out of a war are not. So
this is kind of it's not a war anymore, it's more politics.
Right. It enters the role of politics. Yes. Anything else anybody wants to add or think about?
Well, and we're learning, too, what people who hunger and thirst to do what God would have them do, how they act, as opposed to people who seemingly, or we're not told that they do. There's a lot of testosterone going on there, you know, that these guys are just... kill him, kill him, go after him.
The competition, yeah. Still there, which is great in war.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's your thing, it's great in war, but it's not great in life. And, I mean, it's like watching football players. Some of these guys are the most noted wife abusers in the country. Why? Because that testosterone just keeps going and they don't know how to stop it. So as we look at our story, think about it in reality of life. If we are supposed to be applying, what do we apply and what do we pay attention to? And many of you have raised or are raising boys. How do we help our boys that are going to be different than the girls right away? Perfectly different? Not always, but enough. That was funny. Any questions about what to do?
On raising boys or to study?
Pray, and study. Yeah, and go as far as you can. If you find that you're not going to finish, then don't finish. Do what you can do. Think about it during the week. What is meditation? Meditation is taking that word of God and going over it and praying about it, and you know, in yourself saying, you know, I've been competing with this other person for 10 years now, and I don't think God would have me do that, and I don't know how to stop it. How do I stop it? Lord, we just come before you and place this lesson in your hands and ask that you place it in our hearts. We ask in the name of Jesus and all that has gone before us that we be wise and that we be gracious and that we be thankful. Amen.